Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is Gary Hallgren. Gary's the president of Arity, a mobility, technology, and data analytics company that grew out of Allstate and is focused on helping organizations through the changing pace of transportation. In 2016, Allstate recognized its unique ability to identify and quantify risky driving. Rather than keeping the technology to itself, the company recognized the strategic asset it had, forming Arity in the process. Prior to joining Arity, Gary was the president of Connected Car at Allstate. In this interview, he highlights the three main issues in the transportation industry. Most importantly, driving is extremely inefficient as the average car is used for 4% of the day. Furthermore, 40,000 people die on the roads each year, and driving is extremely expensive, both in time and money. To make a difference in these areas, Arity is working with shared mobility companies, insurance companies, and automobile companies to solve these issues. We also discuss why Gary believes fully autonomous vehicles are further away than many think, how the company mixes the stability, strength, and resources of a Fortune 100 company with the entrepreneurial spirit of a startup, how Arity attracts talent, and a variety of other topics. Gary Hallgren, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today.
Thanks for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. Gary, you are the president of Arity, a role you've had for a bit more than 3 years now. And I wonder, for those who might not be familiar with Arity, can you talk a bit about the background into the company? What is it that your organization does?
Sure. Arity is it's a company that was founded about 3 years ago, and it grew out of the Allstate Corporation. The Allstate Corporation, everyone knows, as being a very large property and casualty insurance company. But there's a variety of other businesses inside of it as well. And Arity is a technology company, data analytics company, with a focus on helping companies through the changing pace of transportation.
And why it's very interesting, the structure founded by Allstate. I'm curious, can you talk a bit about that process? In terms of this large organization developing an idea, seeding it, developing a startup of sorts within a bigger organization. Can you talk a bit about the genesis from that perspective?
Sure. The way the company was founded was in 2010. There was some thought process around how transportation was going to change and how insurance pricing was going to change around with it. Insurance is actually a really interesting industry in that you don't know what it is going to cost when you sell it. So people generally have to come up with other sorts of variables, other sorts of ways to accurately price insurance. And typically and traditionally, this has been done more around who you are. It can be everything from how old you are and how long you've been driving, and even in some states, it can be around gender, it can be around other factors. During the end of the 90s, companies started to use credit variables to score insurance, and it wanted to be very predictive. So it really transformed the insurance industry, and as companies started to look for what is next, Allstate started thinking there must be something that is better than what is about you, which is kind of how you drive, how you actually handle the car. So they started to put devices into cars and giving people a discount for sharing data along with that, with the assumption and the hypothesis that this was going to be more predictive than other variables. It turned out over the course of years and collecting this from millions of drivers that the assumption was true, that not only is it predictive, but in fact, it is the most predictive. So now it isn't it might be, it could be, we think maybe if we know that this is the most predictive variable that you could use to most accurately assess the risk of a driver. So when I think about the key secret sauce of Arity, it's like we have this unique ability to identify and quantify risky driving. And the quantify part is probably the most important, that to truly understand that if you have these behaviors, it's going to lead to losses. So that's the premise of the company from the technology standpoint, from the insurance standpoint. Then came your question of, well, why Arity? And the company faced two choices. They could either try to keep the technology for themselves or what they did is they looked in the industry, and because this variable is so predictive, believed that every insurance company will price insurance in this way in the future. And as a corporation, we have a strategic asset that could be valuable to the rest of the industry. And that's when Arity was formed in 2016.
Very interesting. And can you talk a bit about how you interact with customers and what the value proposition given back to them is, the way in which they opt in, you know, how the business model works from that perspective?
Yeah, I'll go up real high first, and then I'll come down to that specific question.
Very good.
So if you think about the main problem that we're trying to solve, the average car is utilized 4% of the time. Like, nobody would ever design a system that had vehicles used 4% of the time. Even during rush hour, the numbers in the small double digits of utilization. So that's one problem, is that it's inefficient. The next problem is that it's relatively unsafe. There's 40,000 people that die on the roads every year, and that number had been going down, and now it's been going back up again. So there's a safety problem that is there that there are opportunities to fix. And then lastly, it's just really expensive. It's expensive in the amount of time that people spend in traffic trying to get from A to B. And the other part is just pure dollars. $3 trillion a year are spent on transportation just in the U.S. So you think about that macro problem, people don't like it. Everyone complains about traffic. Everyone is frustrated by it, but there weren't a lot of options. So really what changed was when the rideshare companies started coming into the picture, they gave people options for that. And people gravitated towards those. There's a lot of pushback from lots of people in the ecosystem, whether or not it be insurance companies or airports or the taxi industry, that this was a change and we didn't want to be disrupted. But the reality is that it's good for consumers. They like it and they want to use these services. So what we did at Arity, we started to look at where is this disruption occurring and do we have a role that we could play to help improve it. Part of that we decided was insurance companies for sure, because they're being disrupted as to historically you just have one car, you drive it to and from work. Well, now sometimes someone is going to be sharing your car. Sometimes you're in a car with somebody else. Your kids are going to be driving with somebody else. We want to assess risk in a different way. So for shared mobility companies, there's actually as interesting of a proposition as there is for insurance companies and then automobile companies as well. So those are the three vertical markets that we target our solutions for, with the goal of just making transportation safer, smarter, and more useful. So getting down to the specific question is, it really depends upon the use case. For example, a shared mobility driver. I personally want my driver to have 5 stars because they indeed are a good driver and not just the car didn't smell and they gave me a mint when I got out. So there's opportunities for consumers to better understand that. Me personally, I split my time between California and Chicago. I have to have a car in both places. So my utilization of my cars are actually even less so. So what a great future for me to have somebody using my car in each of those locations when I'm not there. But I'm going to want to know, are they a good driver and how do we identify that? So if I can identify and quantify that level of risky driving, I'm going to want to know who's going to be using my car. And then lastly, on the insurance side, whether or not it's for me as an individual, I want to get the most accurate price. I think that the idea that just because I'm young, I should pay more, or just because I've had credit issues in the past, I should pay more. I think it should be more about how I drive. So the value proposition to them is share data with our customers, who are insurance companies. So the end consumer shares data with them, and then we can more accurately price that insurance. And from that, I personally just believe it delivers more transparency and more control to the customer than some of these other variables that are very hard for you to change.
Interesting. I'm curious, can you talk a bit about the team that you have developed? And I recognize the organization's been around for a while, as you noted, but was it largely built from people within Allstate? Was it on the net more people hired from the outside and brought in, given some of the special skills necessary that you to deliver what you've described? From a people perspective, a skill perspective, how has that evolved?
It's been a really interesting continuum, I guess, that we've went through. When we originally started, it was people that grew out of the Allstate Corporation, because the company had been building this connected car telematics solution for some period of time. But we started to bring in more from the outside as well. And it's interesting, as you're part of a large enterprise, and then you're recruiting and competing against others. So I never felt like I was competing against typical Allstate competitors. I'm competing. I have, next to me on the floor here is Braintree. I have Google and Facebook that aren't too far away. There's other telematics companies that are nearby in downtown Chicago as well. So you're in this war for talent of creating somewhat of a startup, but also bringing in the kind of the legacy of the large corporation. So I think it's actually a great value proposition for employees, that they're able to have the stability and the strength and the resource that a Fortune 80 company can bring. But at the same time, we're able to operate largely independent in how we operate and in how we grow. So it's a little bit of the startup culture blended together with a little bit of the strength of a very stable, you know, large company, and then to start to tie the innovation along with it. So blending those two types of cultures together isn't easy, and it's always a journey to try to make a great opportunity for employees to innovate and do amazing things. But that's what we're striving to do.
You referenced the fact that you're in an innovative corridor of Chicago. You mentioned earlier in the Merchant Mart building just north of the river, and clearly not in Allstate's headquarters. Presumably that was intentional, creating your own space and developing it in a space that's particularly conducive to, you know, some of the millennial talent that is necessary in a business like yours to take just one of many factors that determine where somebody puts the headquarters of a business. I'm curious, you know, how do you think about the interaction with the parent company, Allstate? You know, how often do you interact with technology, or excuse me, with executives rather there, you know, as opposed to, you know, operating more independently as an entity unto yourself?
We've been extremely fortunate in just the way that the structure is created. One of the struggles, I guess, even just talking about it is interesting, because we are owned by the Allstate Corporation. The Allstate Corporation owns many companies. They own the Allstate Insurance Company, which is the largest company that they own. They own Esurance, which is an insurance company, but they also own SquareTrade, that does warranties and are sold through large retailers. They own a dealer services business that delivers services through 10,000 dealerships, a roadside assistance program. So if you have a new car, many car manufacturers, many phone companies, if you call roadside assistance, you're calling an Allstate company. So when I think about that, I think about the Allstate Corporation. And when I think about the insurance company, I think about the Allstate Insurance Company. So I'll describe that in two ways. The Allstate Insurance Company is my customer. So we think of them as a customer. They're in a regulated industry. Our corporation is not in the regulated part of the Allstate corporate structure. So we must actually interface with them in a very, in the same way that a vendor and a customer would interface for a whole variety of legal and regulatory reasons. And then from the Allstate Corporation, then we have a different relationship. From there, we can leverage a variety of resources. So some of the corporate facilities we are able to leverage. And then one of the biggest ones is around security and cyber. Having the backing of a Fortune 80 financial services company that takes security and cyber so seriously, it gives us great benefit relative to others that we compete against that are maybe the same size as Arity, because we can leverage some of the infrastructure from the big corporation. So we try to take the best from the Allstate Corporation, and then are fortunate to have customers that are also subsidiaries, or I guess siblings to us inside of the corporate hierarchy.
A while back, Gary, you wrote a piece about the need for, you know, the piece was titled "A Call for Smart City Collaboration and Coordination," a desire for organizations like yours, for example, to work within the context of broader smart city initiatives. And it brings to mind, as you've noted in multiple parts of our conversation, the changing landscape of transportation, the way in which people think about car ownership or not, as the case may be, and how that's evolving and evolving rather quickly. And even now, you know, getting to the point where perhaps the cars will be driving themselves as opposed to the driver doing so. I wonder if you, especially with the honing in on the smart city point, how you think about the relationship between an organization like yours and the broader infrastructure of the cities in which you operate and in which the customers that you serve drive their cars or are driven, as the case may be.
Yeah, it's such an interesting problem. When you think of the evolution that we're going to go through to get from one to the other, the system is ridiculously inefficient, as we talked about earlier, just the usage of vehicles and where they are in the parking and everything associated with that, that if you were running a manufacturing plant, you would just shut it down. You would shut it down, you would retool it, and you would open it back up, and it would be entirely different and far more efficient because nobody's going to use assets 4% of the time. But you can't do that. Myself, I grew out of an engineering background and worked in the transportation system from the state perspective when I was just out of school. And it's even more complicated than just the roads, and that's government, so that's the city. Because in any given city, there are state roads, there are county roads, there are city streets. And each of those are controlled generally by separate organizations. So trying to get stoplights synchronized together, trying to get construction projects that are synchronized together is really hard in these different groups that are all funded in different ways. And it's hard for them to work together in an efficient manner. So the first part of the smart cities is what kind of infrastructure and data can you provide into that, that those groups of companies or groups of organizations can better work together. From our standpoint, companies like us, we have really interesting insights on where accidents happened, on maybe it's areas where accidents aren't happening yet, but based upon our unique understanding of how to identify and quantify risky driving, we actually know this is going to be an area where there will be accidents. So we believe there's a lot that we can do to provide data to the cities or provide analytics to the cities to help enable them to make that happen. But as you start thinking about that complex problem, and you mentioned autonomous vehicles, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that specifically later, but the idea of how long it's going to take to get the infrastructure ready so that it can certainly be fully autonomous, but that whole stretch along the way of what do you do in the meantime when there's normal vehicles that's in the same model as today, there's shared vehicles that are going to be different, there's the semi-autonomous ones that are doing their thing, and then the fully autonomous ones. And the cities need to adapt to all those use cases. It's a monumental problem, but it's a great problem because if there is an opportunity to improve, one of the stats we use is I mentioned the $3 trillion of spend that happens on transportation, that if there was just a 20% increase in the utilization and the efficiency of the system, it winds up being $3,000 in the pocket of every household in the U.S., which is a huge amount of money when the median income is $56,000 a year. So we think that tying these different modes of transportation together with all these aspects around the cities to make the system more efficient is just so good for society, and it's going to make consumers' lives better, that all of these things are going to happen. It's just a matter of time.
And I'm curious what your perspective on that time is. There are so many different perspectives that are offered for people who are shaping that future, going back to autonomous vehicles and some of the progress that's already been made for semi-autonomy, as you mentioned, and in some cases, tests that are going on for full autonomy. How do you think about that as somebody who clearly has a greater set of information and reason to think about this on a regular basis than most?
My general belief is that this could be, first of all, a lot longer than what anybody is thinking. And I think that's been all the companies that have been working on this now, I think, are pushing out their estimates as they just realize that it is a really hard problem. I think the technology in the vehicles is going to be here faster than maybe what we might think. But even that, getting them widely deployed across many use cases will be challenging. So I'm really excited about the idea of long-haul trucks in between large metropolitan areas driving in the middle of the night in platoons. that seems like reasonable sorts of things. I could see shuttles. I could see things on controlled campuses. I could see runs to the airport. I could see anything that is a little bit more consistent. But once you get out of that consistency, I think it's going to be a much longer tail in order to get to the point where it really is the way that people think of the Jetsons or people think of that end future state.
I'm also curious, talking about the present state more than the future state, Gary, as somebody who does have reason to pore through the data and perhaps make adjustments based upon what you're reading in terms of how, when, and why people have accidents, as an example of one of the examples that you gave, to what extent has it colored the way in which you drive? I'm curious if the data has led to any, I don't imagine that you're necessarily a bad driver or have any issues, but I wonder if the data has been educational for you as you think about where and when and how you drive.
I think what's interesting is it's the definition of what risky driving is, or the person in front of them is an aggressive driver, or I think the stat, something like 80% of all people think they're better than average. So the perception of what you do is, it kind of clouds all of it. One of the things we think about is that what a heartbreaking event is, there's some things that are very binary. Did the airbag go off? Okay, that's something that just has happened and you set a threshold for that. But what is heartbreaking or heart acceleration? What does that really mean? And what we've been able to do, because we have mass amounts of data, we're collecting a couple of billion miles of driving data every couple of days. So it's a mass amount of data that we're collecting. And when we're able to tie that to actual claims data, we start to know that this type of heartbreaking leads to claims, or this type of using your phone when you're driving leads to claims. It leads to accidents. It leads to cars being damaged, or it leads to people getting hurt. And to be able to truly understand that has changed things. What is interesting is what perception when you're driving with others, and what they feel is a heartbreak versus what you feel is a heartbreak is a pretty arbitrary sort of feeling in people's minds. But we've been able to put the data science behind that to really know that. So am I more cautious? Do I leave more room? Do I try to do all of these things? I certainly do. But it's the more interesting thing to me is just the differing perceptions that people have just based upon their experiences. And even people that say, well, I would never want a telematics program pricing mine because I'm an aggressive driver. And I think some of those people are and some of those people aren't. They just don't have a whole lot of baseline to compare it to. And when you compare it to 17 million people as we can today, then you get a much better definition of what aggressive or what is good risk or bad risk really means.
That's very interesting. You know, you've been involved in so many different aspects of the auto industry and the technology-centric aspects of that. You were the president of Connected Car at Allstate prior to your current role. You worked at an organization called, is it Telogis? Is that how that's pronounced?
Telogis,
I beg your pardon. Platform for location intelligence. You were the CEO of Remote Dynamics, which operates an asset tracking and fleet management solution, just to name a few. So you've kind of, you worked in multiple areas at the intersection between, you know, logistics, you know, technology associated with it, data-driven decision-making, and automobiles or trucks, as the case may be. And it's interesting just to see the evolution of your career and, of course, the aggrandizing of your responsibilities along the way. And I'm curious, like, what drew you to this space initially to make it clearly worth your while to stay in various aspects of it, though, of course, with different areas of focus?
Yeah, it was interesting. In school, it was always around being an engineer, and the idea was bridges and buildings. And I did spend time as a bridge engineer right out of school, but then migrated into traffic. And one of the examples I bring up, and first of all, this is like from the mid 90s, so it does make me feel old. I am getting old when I describe it in that way. But one of the field tests that we did in the mid 90s was we were pulling data from sensors that were in the roads, and we were using FM radio technology, because the cell phone data plans weren't prevalent yet, but FM radio technology to transfer this data that would show up inside of cars. And in this case, it was inside of a Volvo car. So we're doing a research project with that. And what you could see from that was that in real time, updated every 30 seconds, you could see the roads turn red, green, and yellow based upon traffic. And anybody that is around today, that is just absolute commonplace. Of course you have that. It's on Google Maps. It's on Apple Maps. It's on virtually everything that you use today. You see that data. That data didn't exist. There was no technology to enable it. And it was just a pipe dream back when we started to create that in the mid-90s. At some point along the way, the critical mass hit, and all of a sudden that just became ubiquitous. And to me, that was when I talk to people now about some of the what's happening with autonomous or what's happening with pricing of insurance in this way, that is what's going to happen, is that it seems very, very brand new. And then it seems like it's kind of catching on a little bit. And then you hit that tipping point. And once you hit that tipping point, whether or not it was technology that enabled it, or in this case, wireless networks, or the availability of lower cost hardware, whatever that might be, it tips, and then all of a sudden it becomes commonplace. So that's been the journey that I've seen a little bit with the work that I've done in automotive telematics, or moving data from cars and trucks since the 90s, that a lot of the things that I had worked on originally, it was, you were doing the hard work of how do I pull this data out of a truck, for example, when we worked at Volvo, or how do I move data through the air, to the point now where those are very commonplace. But really the genesis behind what I've done for these 20-some years is all around making transportation better, understanding data from cars and trucks, and allowing companies to make better decisions with it, or in this case now with consumers making better decisions with it. So it's been a unifying theme, and in some ways it seems like it's sped right by, but that's the message that I give to the young people now that are inside of our organization, is that what you are working on is going to be the future, and you will look back, whether or not it's 5, 10, 15 years from now, and it'll just be commonplace that, of course, people are priced based upon how they drive. Of course, I manage my driver coming to pick me up based upon how they drive, and it will just be commonplace, whereas today it feels like we're breaking all this new ground.
Yeah, very interesting. I wanted to also spare a moment, if you don't mind, to talk a bit about Chicago, where you're based and where you work, and the technology community generally speaking. You spoke of some of the innovative companies that are, you know, within throwing distance, it sounds like, of where you're sitting as a starting point. But I'm curious what as somebody who has built a team in Chicago, who draws technology talent in the area, who sits at the center of one of the areas where a lot of the tech startups are where they are centered. I'm curious what your perspective is on the evolution of Chicago as a technology center.
Yeah, we're really a big fan. The corporation, Allstate, has been a Chicago company for a long time. They're out 15 miles or so into the suburbs. Personally, I've always had a bias towards the city. I just think it's a very livable, it's the right size. It's very livable. It has a lot of the wonderful Midwestern values. I live in California, spend time here now, but I grew up in Minnesota. And I think there's something that is really good about that Midwestern work ethic. But we see a lot with the talent that are here. It's either people that have gone to school in or around here and kind of want to stick around. We also see a lot of people that want to go to some of the other tech centers, or more specifically out to the Bay Area, but then relative to cost, or relative to maybe just being away from home or other reasons, but they want to get some of that experience out there and experience it, but then they want to come back. So I picture here being just a little bit more mature. It's a little bit more, certainly a ton of youth here as well, but I just think the environment is a little bit less chasing the startup dream, and a little bit more of creating companies that are creating real value. Right here in downtown Chicago, we're a big fan of this area. There's an incubator called 1871 that's a few floors from us. We see there's a lot of talent in and around the building. We've created a very great office setting here. And when we get people into this office and they realize the kind of data they can be working with, the kind of problems they could be solving, we are able to compete with the likes of the biggest tech companies with the value that we bring as an enterprise and especially solving these problems. You think of data scientists. We have 75 data scientists on the team, and they're trying to solve these problems of how to change transportation. And in a lot of places that you go to, your job is to try to improve click rate by 0.2%. Now, that 0.2% might be worth a ton of money for that company, but I think the fulfillment of and sense of mission that you can bring to some of these companies like ours are great. And then to rally that in and around this city and specifically here down around the Merchandise Mart is fantastic.
Excellent. Well, Gary Hallgren, thank you so much for taking time with me today. It's been great to get to know a bit more about your story, to learn more about your organization, Arity, and get your perspectives on the future of driving at the same time. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks. I really appreciate you having me, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Michael Mathias, the EVP of Customer Experience and Chief Information Officer of Blue Shield of California.